For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey folks, welcome to another episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm Ben Sternke, one of the co-founders of Gravity Leadership, and today I'm joined by the other Ben, as I like to call him, Ben Hardman.
Yep. I like to call you the other Ben.
I know.
I think it's a back and forth kind of Ben thing. But we make it easy when we hang out with people when we're both named Ben. So
yeah,
Taller Ben. I'm the taller Ben.
I see. That's how. Yeah, you're also the older Ben.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm the older Ben.
And you're also the other Ben. So it works out. Everything's fine. We're here today with a guest we've got on the podcast today, Carlos Rodriguez, all the way from Puerto Rico.
Ben is the white guy's name that is, there's a lot of them. Carlos would be the brown version name of that.
A lot of Carlos. Yeah. Yes.
It sounds exotic, but it isn't.
Right. Yeah. It's like Juan, right?
Yeah,
it's just John.
It's just John. Yeah, and I have a cousin who's Juan Carlos, of course.
Juan Carlos, yeah. John Carl.
And both my kids are named Carlos, just to state that fact, as my dad is.
Full name is Carlos Alberto Rodriguez Sostre Ortiz Rivera Pagán Burgo Pardo García Caquias Nazario.
Great. I wrote that down, so I'll be able to.
Sorry we didn't say that when we introduced you.
That's fine. I've been married for 14 years, and my wife, I don't think she still knows my full name, which is good.
That's funny. Well, Carlo, I don't know if everybody, I'm sure that some of our listeners are not familiar with you. So do you want to just give us a little biographical sketch of who you are and let us know what you're up to?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Puerto Rico in a, kind of cultural Catholic family. We went to Mass for special occasions and went to Catholic school. But long story short, I got, quote unquote, saved on the most evangelical event in the history of mankind, a Billy Graham crusade here in Puerto Rico. I had that classic experience, went to the front, prayed the prayer, cried the tears, and I've never looked back, really. Been following Jesus since. Went to a Southern Baptist high school while attending a charismatic school. I kind of had my first very Pentecostal charismatic experience in a Catholic mass here in Puerto Rico. So I come from this diverse background of journeys in the faith that always made sense to me. It was never awkward, you know, to be slain in the spirit in mass after learning from my Southern Baptist teacher in school, hanging out with my Pentecostal girlfriend. That was just, you know.
That's great. That's great.
That was very normal for me. And not coming from a Christian background, you know, I didn't have these paradigms that I had to deconstruct. I was constructing them based on all these experiences and all these, you know, different influences that I was having from El Padre Willy, you know, the priest at the Catholic congregation that I would go to. And then Elizabeth Guidini, this very strong, powerful, charismatic woman that my parents' church were attending to. So just came from that background. I ended up in Toronto at a school of ministry. And I was always attracted to, as a Latino and as somebody who, you know, attended charismatic experiences in churches, went to Toronto, did a school of ministry over there in what was known as the Toronto Revival, got ordained there as a pastor, and then been in and out of ministry for the last 18 years. I was a local church pastor here in Puerto Rico. Then I planted a church in Raleigh, North Carolina. And then I was fired from that church, praise the Lord. And then I ended up moving to Puerto Rico again because I was born and raised here, and because Maria, the Hurricane Maria back a year and 2 months ago, destroyed our island. And I've been coming here on a monthly basis with different teams. And again, almost going back to my roots, Catholics, Pentecostals, Baptists, every conservative and liberal, couldn't care less if you want to help Puerto Rico. I've been hosting teams on a monthly basis and move my family here for the long term to continue to host teams to do good work.
Yes, very good.
All that.
Yes, all that. Yeah, that was pretty good. It was a pretty good biographical sketch in very few minutes. So I want to get back to that, like the work that you're doing in Puerto Rico, and how people can get involved in that perhaps. But first I want to back up to, you mentioned getting fired from that church. You also said, praise the Lord.
I said, praise the Lord.
Yeah. And I remember I met you a little over, I guess it was about 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At a little conference. And I've been following you on social media since then. So, you know, you sort of find each other on Twitter and that kind of a thing. And my impression from the outside was that you had kind of come from this charismatic world and had begun to speak out more explicitly about issues of injustice, issues of equality, and those kinds of things. And my impression from the outside is that that didn't sit well with everybody who followed you, with everybody who was kind of in your sphere. Is that accurate? Or, was that a conscious shift for you? And can you talk a little bit about why you chose to do that and what the response was to it?
Yeah. Well, I feel like it wasn't a conscious shift. I feel like I always was speaking on these things about injustice, serving the poor, visiting prisoners. You know, I like to say I try my best to live for that list in Matthew 25. It's pretty clear, right? The audience is, it's been delineated for us. It's like, visit the prisoner, you know, be with the sick. So to me, it was always basic Christianity. I think there's an element of Latinos where, again, culturally Catholics who are more influenced by like liberational theology. So we're not like afraid of that conversation.
Yeah.
Jesus said that, you know, that's how he splits the goats and the sheep. Whoever, you know, visits the prisoner, welcomes a stranger. And it's not like we have to theologically try to like frame it next to every other verse about salvation without, it doesn't depend on works. It's just what Jesus said. So we're like, okay, let's then do the stuff. So I felt like I always was speaking on that. But obviously, the last 2-3 years, the political climate, it's almost like then the same stuff I was saying before is now framed in, oh, that means you don't like Trump. That means you're not a Republican. Wait a minute. I was like, I was always speaking. To me, that was the gospel. And I found myself not being conservative enough for my conservative friends. And at the same time, found myself not being liberal enough for my liberal friends. And I'm living in this in-between of just like, I honestly, outside of all the other labels, I want to be known as a Jesus follower. This is what Jesus said. So let's have a conversation about what Jesus said and put that inside of all the other conversations we're having about whether we should welcome more refugees, about, you know, Bruce Jenner becomes Caitlyn Jenner, about whatever people were talking about on social media. I'm like, okay, let's frame that in the context of the gospel and let's have a conversation from that starting point. And also for me as a kind of charismatic Pentecostal, if I'm reading all the books of like, we love our revival history books. We eat them up. And you're reading about, for example, the Azusa Street Revival, early 1904, 1905, 1906, 1906. In those years, it was a black man who was not welcomed into a Bible school in Texas, who could barely see through one eye, who was disregarded by society in so many, and he was leading this massive move. Really, Pentecostals look back to that.
Yes.
Right? And then even out of that, the charismatic movement has always been from the margins. Like when women preachers were not allowed anywhere else, it was like, the Spirit is on that woman. Boom. She's Catherine Kuhlman and she's filling up stadiums and the Spirit is moving, right? So to me, it was always, number one, it was natural in terms of like these conversations always in the context of the gospel. Like that's what Jesus said. So that's what I'm going with. And my actual faith tradition, my kind of my stream, we were always the people of the margins. It's like the common denominator, the Spirit comes upon you, like you good, you go for it. You're welcome. You're invited. You're not just like, come here and we'll serve you. It's like, no, you could even be in leadership because the Spirit's upon you. So I, you know, I found myself like confused why stuff both from Jesus and from our movement was now an issue. And that's something that I had to wrestle with and still wrestling with because I haven't stopped being a Jesus follower, nor have I stopped being a charismatic Pentecostal.
It does feel like the level of antagonism and polarization just continues to increase. And there's such a challenge for us as leaders to be discerning in what we communicate, kind of when we speak and and what we speak. And so how do you as a leader, I mean, I'm talking to so many different leaders who are kind of in this place of, I'm afraid to speak. Like I'm afraid of losing my job. I'm afraid of losing tithers or congregants or all of these things. And so what are some of the ways that you as a leader discern when do I speak and what do I say?
I mean, that's such a, it's almost like an impossible question to answer because it really depends on, it depends on what you feel the Spirit is leading you to speak on. What are the battles that you've been called to fight? And I guess the answer is that, what are the battles that you've been called to fight? What are the things that you know without a shadow of a doubt? They're like, that's the gospel and I'm not going to deviate from that. And I mean, I used to say there was an element of you can balance it. Now I'm like, man, I lost my job. I think there is an element of like you making a decision. What are things that you can't live without and things that you can live with and that you can kind of lead a congregation through it. For those of you who are pastors and are listening, I'm hopeful because even a year ago, I would have said, man, there's a price to pay and just say what you need to say. And I pray for you that you don't lose your job. Whereas now, even 12 months later, I'm going to all these events, even in my own stream, in my own movement, charismatics, Pentecostals, it's so hopeful because it's almost like we've crossed that line. It's like, no, we need to talk about this. Like we need to talk about racism. There's no doubt about it. We need to talk about sexism. We need to talk about, you know, nationalism. We, all the isms, it's so obvious that we need to address them. So even from 12 months ago, I think there's more leeway for pastors to actually start addressing this from a place of humility always, because we obviously don't have all the answers. But again, we get to look to Jesus. What did Jesus say about this? Let's have a conversation. Let's frame it around that. And so I'm more hopeful than I was 12 months ago.
That's good.
I just caught myself a little bit in the midst of like the height of like you're either this or that, which I think, to be honest, is a gift that we're going to realize 20 years from now. We were able to actually draw lines where we said, okay, that's definitely not the gospel. And that leader definitely made a choice, politics above kingdom. I think it's a gift right now that we're having. It just doesn't feel like a gift. It feels more like a burden.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So good. And I do see, I see a lot of social media things where people are trying to tell everybody how to pastor their local congregation. Like, oh, if you don't speak on this Sunday, then you are like the worst pastor ever. And I think part of it is like, I've got to understand that I'm called to my local congregation and I know the stories and the context. I sit with those people. I pray with those people. I bury those people. Like I do the work of a pastor with them every day. And so I know their hearts. And if I'm not, if I'm just expressing something out of anger or frustration and not communicating in love, then there's some things that I'm missing there. And so I want to just affirm you, buddy. Like,
thanks, man.
That you're joining a great cloud of witnesses who have suffered for the gospel. And, I know there's a lot of leaders who are wrestling with the consequences of this. And so as we talk about these kinds of things with Gravity Leadership, I don't want to ever take it lightly. Because I know that I can speak on racism this Sunday. In fact, I am, I'm preaching Acts 10 this weekend and I have no fear that I'm not going to get fired. I can get after it and I can, you know, challenge, but I know that there are people who, if they broach some of the same subjects that I do, there's different consequences.
No, it is this thing of the season. Again, like you could have done that 5 years ago and you would have been celebrated, you know, in other churches. Oh man, the pastor's addressing that. That's great. But now it's immediately becomes a political statement. It immediately becomes.
Yeah.
And it has to do with media, social media. Our connectivity is so intense that we're assuming what other people are talking about. Nuance has become a legitimate thing because we're just completely like fully aware of all these conversations. And then we're hearing whatever somebody's saying through those conversations we're already having in our heads with ourselves or arguments we're having with somebody on Twitter that then we transpose to our pastors, our leaders, our friends.
Yes. We've allowed the frame, and this is where I think you mentioned this earlier, Carlos, like where there's a frame within which we hear everything, and we've allowed like social the media basically world that we're living in now, we've allowed that to determine what that frame is, and so we never question that frame, and so the only way we have to hear what our pastor is saying is through that frame. And so you're for Trump or you're against him. Like that, that's the only thing I can think of when you're talking about racism or immigration or whatever it is. Like that's the only frame I have. We've allowed that to become hegemonic.
And that's kind of what I've tried to do to the best of my efforts. And sometimes I've gone too political. Sometimes I haven't been political enough, but to the best of my efforts, if we are, and I've almost fallen in love with that concept of Jesus as the name above all names, because of media and social media, there's so many names that are in the forefront of all these conversations. Even if you're not naming them, people know who you're talking about, or they assume to know who you're talking about. And that's why I'm falling in love again with like Jesus, 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 the gospel's the gospel, the gospel. Whatever conversation we're having, I'm going to try my absolute best to frame it. Jesus, this is what he said. This is how he did it. And sometimes I fall short. I grab Jesus and I try to stretch him too long to what I want him to say. but as best as I can, I'm consuming the story, the language, the essence of who Christ is, and trying to, you know, live it out in the here and the now. So one of the reasons we moved to Puerto Rico was for that, not just to talk about Jesus, but to see how we can encounter Jesus and the people here and then serve Jesus as we serve them.
Yes. That's great, man. I'd love to talk a little bit about Happy Sonship, which is the nonprofit you started. I think you started it before you moved to Puerto Rico, but it's been operating for quite a while. Just a little anecdote. One of the things, I'll let you talk a little bit more about what you guys do, but one of the things that Happy Sonship does is they sell t-shirts and mugs, swag. Mm-hmm. You might like to call it, right?
We don't call it that, but
well, anyway,
that's Indiana. I don't know.
I prefer that.
No idea what that is. Yeah, Jesus swag. No. Okay.
Right. Oh my gosh. Lord help, Ben.
Yeah. I'm really sorry. I'm derailing the podcast.
Lord help the other Ben.
I've become the other Ben just now. All right. So, but they are t-shirts that kind of this. what you just said, like Jesus, 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 like let's encapsulate this message. They have little messages on them, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, love thy blank neighbor is one of the t-shirts, mm-hmm. right? That kind of thing. So our friend and Gravity co-founder, Matt Tebbe, he has several of these t-shirts. He really loves them.
That's nice
of
him.
Yeah, yeah. And we joke with him, though, that it's like his witness wear.
Yeah,
it is the new witness wear, and it's fascinating though, because he wears it intentionally, like okay. you know, when he's going different places or whatever.
Yeah,
and you know, like I always think he looks a little funny with his pink t-shirt about how Jesus, you know, empowered women and all that kind of stuff. But
yes, Matt.
Yeah, no, Matt. It's great. But he is. The responses he's gotten are super interesting. They're super interesting. And one of them that I wanted to highlight, you were talking about polarization, like is that love thy blank neighbor. And this is a t-shirt, mm-hmm. I don't know what else, you know, love thy Muslim neighbor, love thy gay neighbor.
Homeless
you know,
neighbor.
Homeless neighbor. There's a whole bunch of, you know, lists there. And I think he's got that on a t-shirt or on his iPhone case or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Christians respond very differently to that than non-Christians. And he's had Christians come up and say, where's that Christian neighbor?
Yeah, or that white neighbor.
Or that white neighbor, you know?
My biggest complaint from my store is people, which we do have several lists, and mm-hmm. there's one that includes white neighbor, Arab neighbor, Republican neighbor.
Yeah.
But our best seller is love thy homeless neighbor, gay neighbor, Muslim neighbor, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And my biggest complaint is from white Christians saying, where does it say my white neighbor?
Yeah. Well, this one, whatever Matt had, it had thy Christian neighbor on it. And this,
it did,
The Christian just assumed that it didn't have it on it. And he was like, no, it's right there. He's like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, but you know, just again, like just even seeing that message immediately provokes this mm-hmm. polarized, antagonistic mm-hmm. response, even though it's not even true. Like Christian was on the list, you know. So anyway, but he gets entirely different responses from non-Christians. Non-Christians are almost universally appreciative.
That's right. We sell a lot. This is a good story, even for others maybe out there thinking of nonprofit activism, whatever. I always wanted to have a nonprofit that didn't depend just on donations, that we could have creative ways to fund the work. Because even as a local church pastor, I found myself let's start a sermon series on tithing because we need to pay the bills. But really, we're doing it because we really want people to do good with their tithes and offerings. But really, it's because we needed money for the bills, right? So I found myself just kind of like accommodating conversations, trying to make it spiritual when we just need money. So I was like, I want to move a little bit away from that. All that to say, we started the happygivers.com, which is the store for the Happy Sonship nonprofit.
Okay.
And the Happy Givers, we made like 90 grand last month on apparel. Because we're selling tons of t-shirts, mugs, hats. And 100% of that goes into the nonprofit pot so that whenever teams come to Puerto Rico, I can say, hey, we have 20 grand to fix these 5 houses. And hey, we got 10 grand to do this work, this project here. Mm. And at the same time, we're starting all these amazing conversations, mostly non-Christians being overly supportive.
Yes.
Obviously, Christians wearing them. So we know there's a bunch of Christians out there that are wearing the apparel, and there's that double kind of win of, yes. saying something that they want to say and helping the work we're doing here in Puerto Rico and Peru and Ethiopia and other places. So, yeah, it's been interesting to kind of find myself in that swag world, whatever you call it.
but
it's really a way to fund the mission. It's really a way to be free to do the work that we wanted to do.
Yeah. So Happy Givers is kind of the store part. It's the we sell stuff and then... Mm.
That funds the Happy Sonship, which is the nonprofit,
the overall nonprofit. So tell me about the name. I was struck by that name, Happy Sonship. Where did that come from, and what does that mean?
Yeah, well, in my charismatic world, when I was the rising star back in the glorious days, my first book was called Simply Sonship, which is that whole concept of kind of encountering God as a father. Okay. I come from an abusive alcoholic background. So the whole concept of father, my dad was my hero and my greatest enemy, both at the same time, depending on whether he was drinking or not. So when I have this radical encounter with Jesus and I start going to church, I always struggle with that concept of God as father. And one of the beautiful things that I learned in my time in Toronto, I mean, huge props to them for really carrying this message of you know, the father's love. And he's that father who runs and hugs and kisses, according to the story in Luke 15, the prodigal son. And I had just these, you know, all these kind of moments of really surrendering my heart to all the judgments against fathers, not just my earthly father, but spiritual fathers and any other kind of father figure, and really discovering God as a loving, kind father, which then really led me into more like, this is not just, he's a good father for me, but he's a good father for all. Mm. And that was part of the deviation, the kind of transition from really discovering this revelation of God as father and how lovely he is, how willing he is to forgive, to love, to restore, but not just me, everybody else. Yeah. So that was part of the transition. So happy sonship. All that to say, I was going through a major faith crisis. My ministry was being extremely successful. I'm getting invited. I'm speaking at massive conferences. I'm selling tons of my first book. And my marriage is crumbling. I am cursing my head off at home. I'm being aggressive to my wife. I'm not hurting her, but I'm threatening, right? And I'm finding myself becoming like my dad, but in a more Christianized way. Wow. I'm not sleeping around with women, but the church really is my number one lover. And through all that, the least I was not happy at all. But my kids kept singing that stupid Pharrell song, "Because I'm Happy." They would not stop with that song. Probably the worst summer of my life. And the whole concept of sonship, which was something that I was trying to kind of brand for a new generation, and the song Happy came together. And honestly, it's because sonship.com was too expensive to buy, so I just added Happy. All that to say, that's all I had to say.
Carlos, sorry. You were doing so good with the story until you threw in the last part.
It was expensive, and Happy Sonship was much cheaper. That's it.
Yeah. It's beautiful, man. That there's such a joy in our identity, that there is a joy in who we are and who Christ sees us to be. Right. I love that. And it's available for everybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm struck too by, as we interview leaders, that your story is somewhat common. I mean, not the details, you know, the specific contours, but just the dichotomy between what's happening out here, like what the world sees, a successful book, rising star, speaking at conferences, that kind of a thing. And the dichotomy between that outward world that looks so good and the inner world that you described, where, you know, there was this battle, you know, to really, I find it ironic, I guess, that the whole topic of the outer world was sonship. And then, like, that's the primary battle, you know, like even in your home, that kind of a thing.
That's right. I mean, my messages were all like family comes first and it's all about family. And yet I'm doing the exact opposite.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't even say battle, because I was so blinded. It wasn't like I'm struggling. I'm literally telling my wife, I'm such a good husband. I have a couple of little issues. You're just ungrateful, and the church is ungrateful, and I have too much pressure, and I'm serving Jesus, and I'm giving my life to this. So just cut me a little bit of slack. If I make a hole in the wall, at least I'm not doing it to you. And I was completely blinded to my, you know, in my ego, in my own narrative. Wow. I stopped listening to input. And the worst part about it, I knew how to frame my issues in such a way that people would be like, oh, he's so humble, you know, he's so honest, but not enough for people to go like, my goodness, he needs to stop being a pastor. He needs to stop selling his book. He needs to get some counseling and ministry and prayer and everything else. So it wasn't until we hit that point, and all props to my wife for, number one, loving me through it, and number two, loving me enough not to let me get away with it. She's like, I draw the line here. And when she did that, you know, I stopped being the pastor. We went through practically a year of weekly counseling, repentance, me having to take the blinders off to then see, oh my gosh, this needs sorting out, and learning skills like legitimate, like therapy, medication, skills to be able to not be that anymore, because, you know, it wasn't the right thing. And then, you know, slowly but surely kind of coming to a place of honesty with myself, with my family, and with, in a way, Happy Sonship began because my ministry was collapsing and I needed a way to kind of process something that was already public. People already knew about it. So I was like, well, whatever, here you go.
Yeah.
Here's everything that, here are my doubts, here's my pain. And of course, because people are hungry for that kind of vulnerability, that kind of raw people connected to it. The first year of the blog, because it really started as a blog, we had more than 4 million visitors reading, sharing, commenting. And that kind of led into, okay, now we're not going to just write about it. What if we do something about the stuff we're talking about? How can we help other leaders? How can we help, you know, whether we're talking about refugees, whether we're talking about the poor here or there. So it became a nonprofit because of that.
Yeah. And that's you fairly recently moved back to Puerto Rico then, right? And kind of focusing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, just this past August. Okay. Again, because we were flying in and out of Puerto Rico with different teams on a monthly basis since the hurricane. So my second book, Drop the Stones, came out the night of Hurricane Maria. I'm doing a book release in Raleigh, North Carolina, Barnes & Noble, all these people. I'm signing a book. I'm finding myself almost falling into the trap again. Oh, and all of a sudden, this hurricane destroys this beautiful island. And I just knew I can't just talk about it. I have to live it. And I started bringing teams and I started doing stuff. And then my wife and I, we knew like best case scenario for our families to be on the ground doing the stuff we love to do. So we, you know, through a series of events, we came back and here we are. We're absolutely loving it. And it's been the best decision. People are like, oh man, you're in Puerto Rico. There's all these issues. I'm like, do not feel sorry for me. I'm drinking mojitos. I'm serving beautiful people. I'm welcoming teams all the time. I mean, if the narrative of you're such a sad missionary will get me more money, it's not worth it. I'm having a good time. Yeah. I'm loving. The will of God is the safest, most exciting place to be. And we feel like we're there.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Carlos, what would you say to the pastor whose ministry is fruitful right now, who's like all the metrics are up and to the right, like on the outside, everything looks good, but there's just a sense of there's something going on inside of me right now that is I'm not where I need to be. Like, what advice would you give to that leader right now?
Yeah, to be honest with you, find somebody that has nothing to do with your world. Because it's so tempting, even really close friends inside of your community, they still carry both you and the community. So even my best intended friends that really wanted to provide a safe place for me, they're on the board of the church, or they're part of the worship team, or they're somehow connected to the community. And there's obviously a place for them. And they were people that I could bounce off ideas and kind of share my struggles. But like legitimate needs that you know, if you're listening, you know without a shadow of a doubt, there's an addiction, there's a problem, there's a pattern in your life that needs to get worse. Find somebody, find a counselor on the other town, find a therapist, you know, 2 hours away. But just please find some help and start the journey that belongs to you, which is healing, transformation, restoration. Because it's so worth it. And what's the point of wearing a mask? I mean, we all struggle. It's like people, we're all embarrassed about the fact that we go to the bathroom, but we all go to the bathroom. Like, forget about it. Like, we all have an issue. We all have a problem. Like, get off of your high horse, take off the mask, walk the humble road. I promise you, you'll encounter Christ like nothing else and community in a deeper way than, you know, in your heart. All our hearts are asking for that.
Yeah, it's great advice, man. Great advice.
Another question that I have, Carlos, for our listeners, on behalf of our listeners, what would you say to a pastor or maybe just a Christian who's listening, who in the past few years, as everything's become more polarized, but you know, part of the gift of that, like you were saying earlier, is that there's this clarity that comes of like, I can speak up. Or I can be silent, right? So there's been a lot of new awareness that a lot of people that I know in the past few years, there's awareness of sexism, racism, systemic injustice, like all of these things. But I think there's a lack of understanding about like, well, how do I actually get involved in what God is doing in those things, you know, other than kind of, you know, just posting an update on Facebook or Twitter, you know, what advice would you have for somebody who's like, I really want to change the way that I'm living. I want to be involved in these things, but I don't, there's no immediate way for me to, the obvious way for me to do that right now. Like, what would you say to that pastor?
Great segue into my third book, Proximity. That's what I'm writing on right now.
Okay.
Hopefully it'll be out early next year. I've discovered that even as I was a local church pastor in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the church, you know, we planted in 2008, And we had a check came in for $1.3 million to buy our building from an anonymous source. We had our own building that was paid off. We had about 600 people coming regularly on a Sunday morning. We're being successful. The church is growing. It's an exciting time. And yet I found myself trying to preach all this stuff, and people like sometimes heard it. Sometimes they would come at the end of a sermon to me and say, like, hey, it was amazing when you said this or that. I'm like, I didn't even say anything close to that, but I guess awesome. Or people like not really tracking with what I was trying to do as a lead pastor and telling me not this, not that. We need an American flag on stage. We need to follow the Jewish calendar. And I'm having all these discussions with, you know, givers, non-givers, people coming regularly, non-regularly. Anyways, it wasn't until I discovered really it is through the act of proximity. And that even that simple concept of Jesus, according to Philippians 2, undressing himself, what made him God, leaving his place of privilege to come to the underprivileged, and like not just to come among us to tell us that he was superior, but to come among us to serve us, to wash our feet, to and really that kind of transition from our thrones of knowledge, our thrones of business, our throne of understanding, our theological thrones, abandoning those places of privilege and coming to be with the underprivileged. Those conversations, the Me Too conversation, welcoming refugees conversation, all those conversations have actual human beings that we can be in proximity to. And it's in that proximity that I can sit next to an extremely conservative person who wants to build a wall and, hey, let's have a meal with our Mexican friends. They're undocumented and we're going to have a meal. And in the context of proximity, when you actually learn names and it's not just a concept, but it's a human life, it's so much better. So for pastors of local churches wanting to get and be part of these conversations, first find human beings that are the center of those conversations and not just speak for them. And now I get to speak in a sense as being the underprivileged, being in Puerto Rico where, you know, we're still struggling with electricity, with internet, with clean water, where there's 100,000 homes still with blue tarps and no ceilings, right? From that place of, I lost my boat coming to Puerto Rico because as American citizens, we still don't have the right to vote here on the island. So as young, I get to say, use your platforms, not just to speak for us, but to make room for us to share our stories. And while we're sharing our stories, don't try to tell us how to say those stories or how to frame those stories. Just make room for people to be human beings created in the image of God whose stories are valuable. And if it's time to cry with them, cry with them. If it's time to like laugh with them, laugh with them, but definitely listen to them. So find human beings, find stories that are actual people with names, and then give them time, give them platform time. Even if it's a short testimony time, if you're talking about racism, then find the African-American, then find the Latino, and don't speak for them. Actually give them room to say how it feels to be them amongst all these conversations. I think that's, as a lead pastor, as a local church pastor, I've found that that is by far the best way to initiate any kind of conversation that we're having right now.
Yes. That's really good, man.
It just takes time and effort, and it's messier. It definitely is messier, especially when you can't control, you know, the Puerto Rican guy telling you how angry he is that the administration didn't respond quickly enough to Puerto Rico, so at least 3,000 people died, right? But at least it's the Puerto Rican guy who knows how it feels, who struggled, who had to move from Puerto Rico, who's now living in Connecticut, and who's left his mom and dad here, right? It's them sharing the story. So. It's easier to consume for people who are in the congregation, your congregation, and then it frames the conversation on human beings, not just on political narratives.
I think it's really important what you said of don't speak for them. I mean, I think that's real. Like so often, particularly in the white church, I've seen conversations with minorities that feels a little patronizing. Or conversations that feel like tokenism, if that makes any sense.
100%.
So I think it's really significant for us to allow people to tell their stories and invite other people to listen. Such good wisdom, man.
Sometimes I have friends, well-intended white friends who I love, who I made community with, who are some of my biggest supporters to the work I'm doing here. And they're like, man, sometimes I feel bad about my white privilege or whatever you call it. I'm like, do not feel bad. Use that thing. Use those platforms that God has given you. Use that to actually demonstrate that the voiceless are not voiceless, that those who are disenfranchised and marginalized actually have a place at the table. We know that they have a place at the Lord's table, and they have a place at the table of the conversation that this nation needs to have. So, those platforms and use that privilege.
And I've been so amazed at how listening incredibly quickly becomes advocacy.
Yes.
Right. So just the fact that I'm willing to listen and hear your story, suddenly I become an advocate.
That's right.
In the eyes of the leaders that I'm working with and walking with, that it's just having the open table and the willingness to listen. That seems like the lowest hanging fruit, right? That doesn't even seem like it's that big of a deal. I'm just opening up space to hear and inviting you to the table. But when I do that, I suddenly am viewed as an advocate, and there's a major shift in posture even towards me as a leader. And so, I think there's such significance in that, man. Thanks for the work you're doing, buddy, and thanks for continue to tell that story. Guys like me need to hear that. We need those stories, and we need to be encouraged in those ways. So I appreciate.
Yeah, it's really helpful, Carlos. Carlos, how can people connect with Happy Sonship? How can they connect with the work you're doing?
Yeah, so happysonship.com is the blog. And again, that's the space where whatever is happening on social media, we talk about it, try to frame it as much as we can in the context of the gospel. So there's videos and articles, et cetera, et cetera. The happygivers.com has quickly become kind of our more attractive space because of the apparel and people are buying. And so we get to share the different things we do. We have a children's home in Peru. We have some work that we do in an orphanage in Ethiopia where our youngest daughter, we adopted her from that orphanage and we're still funding and supporting. And then, of course, all the stuff we're doing in Puerto Rico, which is basically I moved here to be a host of teams, of people, of individuals that want to come and help. It's a beautiful place. It's an American territory. You don't need a visa. So the best thing people can do that are listening, even pastors, you have a few skilled people, whether their skill is being happy and painting, or maybe some construction guys or some mamas that you want to come and give hugs to people, you are all welcome to come. That's why we moved here to Puerto Rico. We're thinking 20, 30 years, welcoming teams of, we have farming projects. Right now, we're calling the Blue Roof Fund, which is we got 25 families that we've identified, mostly single mothers or elderly people who are still living on their blue tarp as their roof. Like roofing. And then once the roof is done, had buying them fridges and new mattresses and being able to help the kids go back to school, et cetera. So we're doing lots of work. It's great. And the best way people can get involved is either buying something at the store or giving a donation directly to the nonprofit, or more than anything, coming to Puerto Rico and helping us do the work. Because, I mean, just seeing your beautiful, lovely faces here would be the best, no doubt about it.
Excellent. Awesome. Great. So we'll put all those links in the show notes. And hopefully folks can get involved in the work that you're doing. Carlos, thank you so much for sharing this time with us, sharing your wisdom with us. I hope we can do this again real soon.
Yeah, me too. I hope so. All right. Love to everybody.
Peace, y'all. Bye-bye.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you. So please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.